Today, I'm going to talk about mainly about this new painting, which appeared last year, and I'll say something about all the scenes. Now, So the title of my lecture is "Picture Version of the Manichaean Kephala," with question mark. I shall talk, explain why I would like to call it a picture version of Manichaean Kephala here later. My lecture consists of several parts. First, I introduce the new discovery, and then I will say something about the component of the new painting. And in the last part, I should like to say something about the new Chinese Manichaean text recently discovered in China, and relationship with in connection with my paintings. Let us see at first the brief history of the Chinese Manichaeism. It entered China, the earliest record is 694, when Fu Duodan, after Dan Bishop, presented the sutra or text El Zong Jing, the book of the two principles. It is generally regarded the Chinese version of the Mani's work called Shabragan. Shabragan is a Middle Persian text which produced by Mani to teach his doctrines to the Sasanian emperor Shabu. That is why it is called Shabragan. And then after that, obviously, you know, Chinese Manichaean sculptures were produced. And later in 732, an imperial decree was issued and the Manichaean religion was banned for the Chinese, but not for Shi Hu, literally Western Hu or barbarians. It means, I think, Iranians. And then 763, the Uyghur Khagan was converted to Manichaeism, and he asked the Chinese emperor to build several Manichaean temples in China. And then in 843, after Uyghur was collapsed, China began to persecute Manichaeism, and it was very severe. It happened in 843, and because they were not able to survive in northern China, one Manichaean monk named Hu Lu escaped and came down to Fujian, or Fuju. And from there, Manichaeism prevailed northward up to Zhejiang, and where Ningbo, the capital of Nansun, was located. And during Nansun and Yuan period, Manichaeism flourished in southern China. And one text, Song Hui Yao Ji Gao, which is a very famous record, no less than 40 churches in just one county of Wenju at that time, when 1120. And during the Yuan Dynasty, Manichaeism was not persecuted because, you know, Mongolians were more open-minded. And it is known that Marco Polo met Manichaeans in Fuju. According to Marco Polo, in all southern China, there were 700,000 households held the Manichaean religion at that time. Well, it seems to be exaggeration, but still, you know, the Manichaeism was very flourishing in southern China during this time. And then we have very meager survival from this period. And there's one very famous Mani portrait, sculpture of Mani in Zhaoan in Zhuanzhou. This is the map. So this is Zhuanzhou and Fuju, and then Wenju and Ningbo, and so on. And this is a map I cited from Zhuzhana Gulati's book. The Uyghur asked the Chinese emperor to build Manichaean temples here in Taiwan, Chang'an, Luoyang, and several other places in southern China. And this is a famous Mani built in 1339, still in Mongolian period. And then it comes to the recent discoveries of Manichaean paintings in Japan. Well, it was first discovered in 2007. And at first, I discovered this painting, which is I called Individual Eschatology. Because, you know, here there is a judgment scene, and here the hell, and here the heaven, and in between there is a human world. After the judgment, the human soul is either go to heaven or reborn again as a human being, or go to hell. And this is the so-called Diana, who will lead the deceased soul to the heaven. And here in between we have the representation of Mani. He wears a white robe, and he sometimes takes with his left hand the end of the robe in this way. In this painting we have an inscription here. Unfortunately, the date part is broken, and so we do not know the exact date. But here it names, this painting was dedicated to Bao Shan Zai Yuan, literally Jewel Mountain Vegetarian Temple. And the painting itself is called Ming Wan Shen Zhen, the sacred painting of the King of Hades. And this is Diana again. And this is a representation of Manichaean Jesus. This painting has been possessed by Arima Harunobu, who was a Christian daimyo or a feudal lord. And you know, this was among his possession. And in 2006, Professor Takeo Izumi studied this painting, and he concluded that this is a Nestorian painting. But because it has got a very special, the so-called segmenta, which are peculiar to Manichaean apostles and church leaders, so it must be a Manichaean painting, and so later it was identified as a Manichaean Jesus. And then I discovered this nice painting, which is a representation of Manichaean cosmos. I call it cosmology. Together with it, several other paintings were discovered. In this painting, Mani started to go somewhere by ships, and he landed in that land, and he proclaimed his religion, and finally his mission was successful, and local people believed Manichaeism, something like that. I call it hagiography, but actually it's a Manichaean church history, or Manivita. This is another piece of some kind. Here is Mani, and he is proclaiming his religion to the Buddhist monks. And together with them, there are small pieces. Two pieces were discovered, which I call it Realm of Light, because it depicts the realm of light. And there are two pieces, and two pieces are joinable. And later, yet another painting appeared, not appeared, but you know, it was published in 1937, before war. And at that time, it was published as a Taoist deity or something like that. And unfortunately, we do not know the present about where it is now. And it is clear, it is the representation of money. He holds in this way, we have four segmenters here. It's a pity that it is almost completely preserved, but still we do not know where it is. And then 2011, this painting appears. And well, I call it Money's Birth because it looks like a baby comes from this woman's chest, and there are several deities here, and here's baby again. Obviously, it looks like Buddha's birth scene. And last year, I published a book publishing all the photographs of the old paintings, and together with my and my colleagues' articles about them. In this year, Giuliana Gracchi, who is now teaching at Northern Arizona University, the specialist of Manichaean painting, published this book, Money's Pictures. In this book, she discussed what the Manet's original pictures looked like, and in so doing, she also discussed our Japanese Manichaean paintings. And one of the astonishing discovery by her is what I call Letterman Wright piece is joinable to the main cosmology painting. And as a whole, it now becomes complete representation of Manet's cosmos now. So heaven, we have heaven here, we have hell here, and in between 10 heavens and moon and sun and so on. And then after I published my book, there appeared another piece. One in Tokyo, and I published it, my article about it in this year, and another one appeared in California, USA. This is what I discovered in Tokyo, and this is the main topic of my lecture today. The other one is this, which appeared in California, and the scholar Miki Morita, who is a Japanese scholar, called think this is again Manichaean painting, and there's no doubt about it, and it is so similar to the Manet's birth scene, so there's no doubt about it. But she thinks that this, well, there are a couple, I mean, female and male here, and so she argued that they are the Manet's parents. And in front of the parents, Manet is standing. And just before he started his missionary work. But it seems to be odd because, you know, if that is the case, Manet should wear a white robe. So it seems to me this is a depiction of Manet's, before birth. I call it an annunciation of Manet because Manet's mother is lying here, and there comes someone who obviously prophesying the birth of Manet or so on. In any case, I think it is a new Manichaean painting. So then let's see my painting, well, new painting. I call it Hagiography 3 or Chart History 3 or Picture Version of Kefalaya. And Kefaraya is, well, we have Professor Tardieu here, and it's difficult to say something about this book in front of him. But anyway, Kefaraya is a Coptic Manichaean book, and it recalls the discourse between Mani and his disciples. We have two Kefarayas. One is so-called Berlin Kefaraya. It has already been published, more or less. And the contents of this Kefaraya is more doctrinal. But there is another Kefaraya, which is now preserved in Chester Beatty Library in Dublin, and it is called Dublin Kefaraya. It has not yet been published, but Professor Tardieu, I think in 1988 or something, published an article about this text and that says that it's a very interesting text relating the history of the Sasanian Empire and so on. So this text is more historical, and Mani and his followers' activities in the early history of the Manichaean Church, in particular in the Sasanian Empire. And now the Australian scholar Gardner and the John Bedun and Jason Bedun and Didi are preparing their edition. And before that, they published their preliminary work, well, preliminary report about this Dublin Kefaraya last year. This is a book. And in my mind, my new painting is, from the viewpoint of contents, it's very similar to this text. That is why I call it a picture version of the Kefaraya. But how about the Chinese tradition? Did Chinese people know the Kefaraya-like literature in Chinese? It seems to me that they knew that. I mean, in the Dunhuang Chinese text, translated in 731, which is usually called compendium, the Chinese title is Mani Guangfo Jiao Fa Yi Due. And this is a summary of Manichaean teaching. Then there is a section about the scriptures. After giving the list of seven canonical work, written by Mani, together with his picture book, there is one passage here. It says, all these seven canonical scriptures paintings appeared when Mani was born. And after that, there is such a remark. Mani preached and explained his doctrine for 60 years after his birth. His disciples recorded them together with the occasions. However, they are not listed here. It seems to me that this is more or less like a Chinese version of the Kefaraya. But, well, they didn't say anything about this. So, well, let's see more closely our painting. The size was 112 centimeters. High, tall, and it has, well, you have the color copy of the painting. So it is, consists of three layers. I call it registers. And it seems to me the first two registers are connected. The other one is not connected. And first register is like this. In this part, Mani and his disciples are here, and in front of him is a lady who looks very nice. I mean, I think she's either princess or queen. Followed by his maidens and followers. And obviously, Mani is teaching to her. And the second, this is the first, and second register is something like this. There is a big mansion or a big house surrounded by a tall wall. And in the house, there is a, well, I think the lady is depicted here again and here as well. And outside the wall, there's a Mani and his followers. And in front of him is someone who, well, obviously they are ladies, wearing white robe and floating in the air. So, well, it seems to be depict the scene when the royal lady, either princess or queen, was converted to Manichaeism. And who can it be? I do not know. Well, as far as I can see, there's no record in which Mani converted a princess or a queen. But there's one story about Shapur Duft, who was Bafram's wife. And there's a story that, well, Mani lost his favor from Bafram because he was not able to cure, heal Shapur Duft. So it means that it seems to me that, you know, Mani was, had contact with Shapur Duft. And I wonder if this scene where she, was teaching this Shapur Duft. And, well, in this scene, maybe this lady is saying something to his to her maidens, and then in this part, she is confronted with a deity from who light streams are coming out like a rainbow. And here we have another scene. It seems to me that she is going to die, and she was welcomed by Diana, who will take her soul to heaven. And before going to heaven, my idea, of course, she comes to say goodbye to Mani. And, well, I think this is such a scene. And the reason why I identify her as Diana, she wears a typical headgear. And if we see the Diana's headgear here, it's something like this. And another representation of Diana here, she is wearing a certain headgear. So, well, it seems to me that this is a scene when she is going to die. So, first and second register depict the stories about the queen or princess conversion to Manichaeism and her death. And what else? In the first register, the left half of the first register consists of these four squares. And as far as I can see, there's no connection with the scenes to the right. I mean, they are four independent scenes. And, well, it is almost clear because, you know, here we have a very famous story. We have elephant here, there's a tree here, he's hanging on the branch, and there is two mice, black mouse and white mouse, and here is a well, and four snakes here, and there's a dragon. It's a very famous story. So it seems to me that the other three are also parables of similar kind. So the left half consists of four independent scenes, evidently having no connection with the story represented in the right half. Among the four, the one on the lower left can easily be identified with a parable named The Man in the Well, well known in Buddhism, Islam, and Christianity. One version from the Buddhist Chinese text, this text reads as follows. Once upon a time, a man, while traversing a desert, saw himself pursued by a furious elephant. He was seized by fright and knew not where to find a refuge when he perceived a dry well near which grew the long roots of a tree. He seized those roots and let himself glide down into the well. But two rats, one black and the other white, gnawed together the roots of that tree. At the four sides of the tree, there were four venomous snakes which endeavored to bite him, and beneath there was a dragon gorged with poison. In the depth of his heart, he equally feared the dragon's poison, the serpents, and the breaking of roots. There dwelled on that tree a swarm of bees, which made five drops of honey trickle down into his mouth. That is one story from the Buddhist text. Unfortunately, our painting is, we can't see bees. Maybe they wrote it or now lost, I'm not sure. But well, there are, of course, this is a story, the religious story, and so there are some allegory of it. Some explanation is the tree and the desert figure the long night of ignorance. That man figures the heretics. The elephant figures the impermanence of things. The well figures the brink of life and death, and so on. I mean, this story has some religious meaning. However, as far as I know, the parable, the man in the well, has not been attested in the Manichaean text, which we know now. But this story is known in two Arabic books, which have something to do with Manichaeism. One is Kalila wa Dimna, which was translated from Middle Persian to Arabic by Ibn al-Mukaffa, who was a Manichaean. This Arabic version was translated into European language and becomes very famous. And the another Arabic book which contains the story of the man in the well is Kitab Bilawhal wa Budasaf. The Christian version is Balram and Yuasaf. And this is also believed to be translated from a Manichaean text, which itself was based on a commonly known tale about the life of the Buddha. That is why we have Buddhasaf here. The fact that Central Asian Manichaeans knew the book of Bilawhal and Buddhasaf is inferred from the Manichaean Uyghur text of the drunken prince who makes love with a corpse. This text is known in Manichaean Uyghur text, and this story itself is also contained in Kitab Bilawhal wa Budasaf. So, obviously, the story of the man in the well was known to the Manichaeans. So, well, then let's see what is the implication of this painting where we have the scene here. Obviously, Mani told this parable when she converted the noble lady. And if you look at the Manichaean texts concerning church history, there are several occasions Mani told parables to the heretics. I cite one text from M48, Persian text, once edited by Bernard Zundermann. In this text, the English version reads as follows. Whereupon the Lord Mani taught the Turan Shah much insight and wisdom. Turan Shah is a king of Turan, and Turan is run between Iran and India, and I think it corresponds to what is now Baluchistan. And he showed him paradise and hell, the purification of the world, sun and moon, soul and body, the apostles that had come into the land, righteous one and the sinners, and the work of the elect and the auditors. Whereupon, when the Turan Shah and the nobles heard this word, they became glad, accepted the faith, and became well disposed towards the apostle and the religion. And when the Turan Shah was then broken apart, and he met brethren being led up, then the brethren paid their homage to the beneficent one, which is money, and the apostle, which is money, told the Turan Shah a parable. And then parable begins. There was a man, and he had seven sons. When the hour of death came, he called the seven sons. He said, "Break all of them together." None of them could do so. Then he loosened, and so on. Well, this is a very famous story, and we can imagine what was the story. But in any case, Mani, in the early history of Manichaean missionary history, we see several occasions when Mani told the parables. Here again is another one from the Manichaean Sogdian text, but I skip here, but anyway, it is a very similar situation. So let's see the implications of the present illustration again. Since we have this painting, it seems to me that the man, the story of the man in the well, was known to Mani himself. Well, it is one assumption. I'm not sure whether it is true or not, but in any case, you know, one can assume that Mani knew the story. And another one is because we have this illustration of the parable here in this Manichaean painting, we may allow to assume that originally, even in Mani's picture book, there was a collection of illustrations of the parables. And fourth implication might be, you know, a scene of Mani's preaching is accompanied by illustration of parables explained by him. I mean, here, Mani's, the scene of Mani's teaching, and here, obviously, they put four parables told by Mani here, and similar situation can be seen in Buddhist art object. This is from Nagarjuna Konda, and it was studied by Monica Jin in her article, The Parable of the Man in the Well, Its Travels and Its Pictorial Tradition from Amaravati to today. There are several art objects in which Buddha is preaching, and beside it there is a scene of this parable, elephant and man and mouse, rats. And well, let's see several scenes from the other religions. Well, I just cited from Monica Jean's article. This is the Islamic tradition. In the Islamic tradition, elephant is changed to camel. In the Christian tradition, the elephant is changed into wolf or unicorn. But this is a Buddhist version again in southern China. It's very astonishing. This painting, this is a broke point, and it was sold during the 19th century, and this was bought by a Christian monk and published there. this is very similar to her painting. I don't know why, but you know, all the other representation, man is in the well, but in this case, man is hanging from the branch and. Well, there must have been some connection between this Southern Chinese version and our Manichaean painting. And then we have, now we identify one scene from the out of the four, and can one identify the other three as well? And well, let us begin with this scene. It is very straight. There's a pond, and man is walking, but as you see, if you look carefully, he is carrying a dog. And he's holding dog's hind leg. And obviously, he's covering his mouth with his sleeve. Well, you can see in the photocopy as well, if you have it. And, well, I don't know, of course, the story, but in one Manichaean Sogdian text, 5030, there is a mention of a story where it says that, you know, like that story in which a prince from whose neck was hung a dead body of a dog. And he is always wanting to throw it away. And obviously, there was such a parable, but we don't know what it is. And when I discussed this with my friend who is doing Uyghur, Buddhist Uyghur text, he drew my attention to this wall painting discovered in Shikshin near Karashar. This is a Buddhist painting in which there's monks, but there's one lay Buddhist, and from his neck there's a depiction of a dog. Well, he doesn't know the story about this, but I don't either. But maybe it is also a Buddhist parable, which was borrowed into Manichaean, Manichaeism. And next one is, let's see, this one. In this case, you know, the box is open and there comes two snakes, and this man is obviously running away from the snakes. Well, I don't know the story either, but in the Birao Harad Buddhasaf, there is one such a story. In this story, it says that some thieves had arranged to enter the treasure house of the king in order to commit a theft, and they pierced the wall of the treasure house and entered, and they looked at objects the like of which they had never seen, and behold, they found a chest sealed with gold. So they said to one another, "We cannot find anything which is better than this chest, which is made out of gold, sealed with gold, and whose contents will be even more beautiful than what we see." So they carried it and walked away with it until they entered some bushes. So none of them trusted the other. Then they opened it, and behold, in it were snakes who jumped into their face and killed all of them. Well, the story is somehow similar. I don't know if it's the same story or not. And the last one is this. For this, I have no idea. I mean, there's one horse, and someone is observing this horse. But in this case, I should like to draw your attention to this very strange-looking plant. This plant appears again in this scene. It is the same plant. And it appears once again in the new Manichaean painting discovered in California. Here it is. And when I wrote an article, I didn't know this flower or plant. And the reader of the article told me that it must be what is in Japanese called Hime Basho, which means princess banana. The name is, scientific name is Musa Coccinea, I don't know. And place of origin is South China. And it looks like this. And well, it's very strange that in the painting we have this plant in church history. So in my opinion, in the original painting, this was another plant, flower. And well, I think the Chinese painter did not understand the plant and they exchanged it, the one which was familiar to them. And this was this Hime Basho, the princess banana. I skip this part. And then I come to the third register. And here is the third register. It's the biggest one. And this is it. And you have it in with you, I think. In this third register, we have Mani and his disciples here again. And he is, confronting with seven people. One is kneeling. And in as a whole, apart from them, there are 41 beings. And more or less 30 scenes are in this painting. And there are some which can easily be identified. For example, this man is jumping towards a tiger. And this is a scene of self-sacrifice, and a scene, it's very famous scene. It is known from the Mahasattva Jataka. This is Mahasattva Jataka, Dunhuang mural. This one, who wanted to help rescue this hungry tiger, and he, threw himself towards the tiger, and eventually this tiger ate him, and so on. So this is it. As a whole, I think all these scenes are the practice of the ascetics, or those who are heretics of Mani's time. So let's see several other cases. There are one who is going into the fire. And it's a Chinese style Buddhist monk with tonsure and wearing kashaya cloth. And here we have someone who is wearing a deer skin. And this one who is wearing a deer skin is known. It is Muriga Charin in the Sanskrit. And the Chinese counterpart is Zhang Bei Lupi Yi, literally meaning always wearing a deer skin as clothes. And in the Indian story, the Muriga Charin is living with the deers, and always together with his wife. And in our painting, here again, one who is wearing a deer skin, and it is she, I mean, it is a female. And so, obviously, in this painting, there is a depiction of one Murigachar in pairs. And what else? And well, there are several interesting scenes here. This is obviously a merchant and who is worshipping a demon riding on a dark cloud. And this man is worshipping a female, but her body is snake. And this is, I think, called in Chinese is New Wa. So it seems to me that in this third register, they depict, well, this represent the heretics of the Manis time. And how many more can we identify? I'm sorry, I'm not competent enough to identify them. But if you see this one, he is very funny, reading a book, lying, but on his back we can see something. And if you look at a Buddhist text, Shiksha Samuchaya, where there is a passage listing several ascetics, and in among them there's one, what is that? Ah, here. Whose bed is on thorns? Obviously, he's lying on the thorns and reading books and so on. And there are several people who are, you know, half naked. This one and several others. These and so on. They very much look like Indian ascetics. And well, then if we ask in this way, so can we find, for example, Jain in this painting, or Zoroastrian here, or Baptist, well, you know, Mani was the contemporary with Baptist and so on, and several others. So if we see, well, I'm not quite sure, this may be Jain, or, and here he's in the water, and maybe he's a Baptist. And this one is living in the cave. And here someone is going into the water, and here is a fish here. And well, apparently he's worshipping the dragon. And I wonder, they are Zoroastrians, because in front of them is some altar, like fire altar like thing, and from there the smoke is coming out. But I'm not sure. So it seems to me the fourth register consists of scenes or depiction of the heretics of the Manis time, some of which we can identify, some are, well, I cannot identify. But let us ask in this way. This painting, again, has its roots in Manis' original painting or not? And if we see Middle Persian text M219, there is such a passage. This is a very famous text, once studied by Henning, because there is a word nigar, it's a word for painting, and it is believed to be the word for Mani's picture book. The text said, "Listen, delicate human being, direct eye and face towards this and see how it is depicted here in front of you on this nigar. Idols, idol priests, altars, and their gods. close my mind to impressions from them, blah, blah, blah. So obviously in Manet's painting, there was a depiction of idols and other religion. So it is also possible, I think it is possible that our painting, although it is made during, I think, 14th century, as other paintings, its root is, well, in the remote past, in Manet's original painting. And the last subject of my lecture today is the Sharpe text and Chinese Manichean paintings. Sharpe is a place name in the Fujian. And since October 2008, a considerable number of Chinese Manichean texts originating from Sharpe district, Fujian, in China, have come to light. These manuscripts have been kept by the descendant of local priests, and many of the manuscripts seem to date back to the late Qin Dynasty, or even to the early Republic period. So far, two aspects of these materials have been highlighted. One is to emphasize how faithfully they preserve the texts they inherited from the Tang time. The other aspect of the Sharpe text highlighted by the Chinese scholars is how much these texts have been Sinicized and have adopted elements of the local Chinese cultures and religions, in particular Taoism. Many of the texts are collections of prayers called Keiben, a ritual manual and employed for incantation and funeral ceremonies. So let us see how faithfully this Sharpe Chinese text preserves the original text. There is one Sharpe Manichean Chinese text called Mo Ni Guan Fo, Mani, the Light of Buddha. There is some verses in Chinese, which of course originally translated from Middle Persian, Persian. If one compares this Sharpe text with one text from Dunfang, in Dunfang we have a Chinese Manichean text called Hymn Scroll, which is represented by H. It is a collection of the Chinese translation of Middle Iranian hymns, Persian and Persian hymns. And if we compare two lines, you see almost the text is almost identical. So, well, they obviously for more than 1,000 years preserved this text very carefully. And I find this passage again in this Mani Guanghuo. It said, Mani denounced his secular life in his age of 4, and when he was 13 years old, he attained the enlightenment. And this story about Mani is, well, as far as I know, that it's not known, it's not attested, it's not found among the Middle Iranian texts discovered in Turfan or Chinese Manichean texts discovered in Turfan or Dunfang. But only here we have this passage. But this information is very accurate. We know it from Biruni and or from the Greek text, so-called Koronumani Codex. So obviously the people in Sharpe preserved a very good knowledge of Mani's life. And I wonder if this information comes from the Chinese text called Erzongjin, Book of the Two Principles. The Book of the Two Principles is quite often mentioned in connection with the Southern Chinese Manichaeans. So obviously they knew this book, they preserved this book, and as I said, that this Erzongjin is supposed to be the Chinese version of the Mani's Shabragan, and in Mani's Shabragan, Mani talked about himself when he began his religious life or something like that. And so obviously they preserved this information, get this information from this text. Quite recently, among the Chinese fragments discovered in Turfan, this text was discovered by Dr. Wan Ding. And when I see this very nice manuscript, and it describes the Manis cosmology, I wonder if this is a fragment of the Evzon Jin. I'm not sure, of course. Now, let us see the relationship, connection between the sharp text and the Manichaean painting preserved in Japan. I think it is likely that texts have been kept by local Manichaeans, who were the descendant of those who produced Manichaean painting of the 14th century, recently discovered in Japan. So all these Shapu Manichaeans were descendants of the Manichaeans of the 14th century who produced the paintings. And in again, in Moni Guang Fo, Shapu Manichaean text, there is a text about Mani's birth. It is said Mani was born from the chest of Moyan, it stands for Mariam. At that moment, golden lotus flowers emerged out of the earth, dew fell from the sky, all deities were happy, while the three poisonous devils were worried and annoyed. And if we see the Mani's birth scene here, Mani was born from the chest of his mother, and lotus flower comes out from the earth, and well, represents footsteps, of course, and sweet dews are coming from heaven, and all the deities are rejoicing, very glad, happy, and three demons were annoyed. We can see three demons here. So obviously the text we find among the Shapu material is agrees very well with this painting. So then I come to the phonetic transcription of Middle Iranian hymns in Shapu text. I'm a philologist and I studied the Chinese text and transcribing Middle Iranian hymns. And in so doing, I have been able to identify two hymns. One is called Shi Ji Jian, a hymn of the four calmnesses or four quietnesses. And well, it's something to do with the four aspects of Manichaean God: God, light, power, and wisdom. The Chinese equivalent is Jin Jing Wan Min Da Li Ji Hui. All these were transcribed in this way in Chinese characters in the Manichaean text from Shapu district. So the transcription seems to be accurate, not very accurate, but anyway, accurate and based on the Middle Chinese pronunciation. And this is the manuscript of this hymn. We have two manuscripts. And this is one hymn which I have able to identify. The other one is the text bilingual in Middle Iranian and Aramaic. Long ago, when I was a student at SOAS, following Nicholas Simzerman's advice, I studied one Chinese Manichaean text discovered in Dunhuang and preserved in British Library. It is called Chinese Hymn Scroll. And there are one hymn which has not been, which had not been identified. And I studied this hymn, and finally I was able to discover that this hymn was not solved because it was bilingual in Aramaic and Middle Iranian. And I published an article, very short article, 1983. But while I was looking at the Sharpe text, I was astonished to discover yet another one in the Sharpe text. But this is the same hymn, but from the Fujian. And if I compare the two hymns, the system of transcription is slightly different. And to my astonishment, Sharpe text represent older stage, while the Dunhuang text represent the newer, later updated version. I don't know why, but well, it seems that in late 7th century or early 8th century, the original transcription was made and this was preserved in Sharpe. But in Dunhuang, they were somehow updated in accordance with the change of the pronunciation of Chinese characters. So, in this case, Sharpe text preserved the older stage than even the Dunhuang text. So, now we can, how to say, not imagine, but you know, we have come to the stage that what was the original Tang time Manichaean scriptures and painting looked like? And well, we don't know. But for the, as far as painting is concerned, here this is a piece discovered in Turfan. They are pictures of Manichaean nuns, erect Thai. And well, their face, in my mind, looks very much like what we find in Shou Soin folding screen. We have it here in Shou Soin, and this is Turfan. And they, well, in my mind, they are very similar. So this painting, I think, well, is a kind of legacy from the Tang time paintings. And then how about the scriptures? As I was studying one of Sharpe texts, well, the Chinese people produced one very small talisman called Chu Sha Fu, talisman against an evil spirit. There is one line here, and if I look at the line carefully, it looks like this. There's one character which is not known, and then Wu Luo Shan representing Middle Iranian Roshan, right, and then comes another one representing Zawar, power, and there comes Jili, it must be the corrupt form of Jilift, a Persian word for wisdom. So it must be right, power, wisdom. So it must be, this part must represent God. But this character, it is consisting of left part is Jen, truth, and the right part is Tian, meaning God. So this character, which is not known in any dictionary, must represent Manichaean deity. And we know the similar situation in the case of Zoroastrianism. In the case of Zoroastrianism, in early 7th century, they coined new character representing Zoroastrian deity. It's Xian. This is consisting of this part, meaning spirit, spiritual, and this part, again, God, heaven. It is known that this character was invented in the 7th century. Obviously, sometime later, Chinese Manichaeans invented their own character, which is consisting of truth and heaven to represent their own god. But this character was totally eliminated from the dictionaries. And I think in the course of persecution, something Manichaean was totally destroyed and wasn't able to reach us. So I come to the concluding remark. Considerable amount of the Manichaean scriptures and paintings seems to have been existed in Chang'an, Luoyan, well, central part of Tang Empire during the Tang time before 843 CE. And many when Manichaeism was severely until when Manichaeism was severely persecuted, there are quite a remain in Tang, but they disappeared. And what we now find in Dunfan, Trufan, Xiapu, Japan are only meager traces of the once flourishing religion. Oh. Thank you very much.